This is the Parenting for Faith podcast from BRF Ministries. Parenting for Faith exists to help you help the children and teens in your life to meet and to know God. We do this through online events, courses, and resources, and you can find out more at parentingforfaith.org. Hello and welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here. As always, I'm your host, Lucy Rycroft, and today we're going to be looking at big emotions. Now, I don't know about your household, but there are a lot of big emotions at Casa Rycroft, mainly mine, also my husband's, sometimes my children's. So we all get involved and they're not pretty, are they? Let's be honest. And I will hold my hand up and say I'm not the best at dealing with them all the time. So I was really, really pleased to speak with our expert guest today, who I will introduce in a few minutes. I think you're going to love this conversation. It's just so relevant, isn't it? Whether we've got toddlers who are just saying no to everything, whether we've got teenagers who are slamming doors or anything in between. It's such a big one for all of us, a real curveball that kind of we can't quite imagine before we become parents. But when we do become parents, we realize, oh my goodness, yes, there's a lot of emotions flying around this house. So I'll introduce her in a few moments. But first, I wonder if you've ever thought about how to engage your child or teen with the concept of mission. Now, mission can mean obviously going overseas, going to a different culture to share about Jesus, but it can also mean taking steps to step outside your comfort zone right where you are. It doesn't have to mean traveling. And we are really delighted that Rachel Turner is going to be joining us for our next pop-up small group to share a little bit more about how we can kind of broaden our own and our children's view of mission through how we parent. It's going to be on May the 14th. That's a Tuesday. They're always the 10th Tuesday of the month, every other month. And it's from 8 p.m. on our Facebook page. So just head there, the Parenting for Faith Facebook page, 8 o'clock on Tuesday, May the 14th. And Rachel Turner will be sharing some amazing content with us. Then there'll be a chance for questions. You can ask your questions to Rachel. And then we usually wrap up at around 8:45, something like that. So grab a friend, grab some snacks, come along. It's going to be great. And we look forward to joining you there. Now, over to our guest. Continuing our season of curveballs, today we're talking about big emotions. Whether they belong to our children or to us, it is very easy for big emotions to make family life very challenging. So I am thrilled to introduce our guest today who is going to help us with this. Lisa Campbell is a trained Zen coach. She's worked in primary and secondary schools. She created Living Well, which offers discipleship resources for anyone wanting to explore well-being with Jesus at the center. And now Lisa has set up Wonderful Me, which is an organization offering specialist inclusion training to children, youth, and family ministries. She is passionate about enabling churches to create safe, inclusive, trauma-sensitive spaces where every child feels seen, heard, and valued, and can discover more of the incredible love of Jesus. Lisa, welcome to the Parenting for Faith podcast.
Hi, Lucy. It's great to be here.
So excited that you're here with us today. And I'm hoping that you can start just by unpacking what we're talking about here with big emotions. What's the kind of biblical picture when it comes to our emotions?
Yeah, well, I really believe that emotions are just a beautiful part of how we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And I think when I look to the Bible, what I find is a book that is just full of emotion. Some of the most beautiful Psalms of David's really are outpourings of emotion as David shares what's on his heart with God. And it's through his emotion that he makes himself vulnerable before God. I think it's often that vulnerability that enables him to come to a place of submission and wonder in the presence of God. And then I think shooting to the New Testament, we look at the life of Jesus. Again, I just think we read a story of a man who was full of emotion. Like probably one of the most well-known examples of that was when Jesus wept at the death of his friend. And I think when Jesus saw his friends grieving the loss of their brother, the Bible tells us that he was like deeply moved. So we just read of Jesus experiencing a whole range of emotions in his life: anger, sorrow, joy, compassion, frustration. I always describe emotions as a little bit like the dashboard of a car. So we've just got a new car and it feels like there's lights everywhere on that. But we've got like a light that tells us if someone's forgotten to put their seatbelt on or if a car door isn't shut properly. Kind of lights that help us work out and respond to what is going on around us. And I think similarly with our emotions, they help us to work out what is happening in the world around us. They alert us to things that help keep us safe. But I think more than that, they help us engage with the world and interact with it. So if I'm in a situation where I feel angry, then that feeling of anger alerts me to the fact that something is wrong. Now, that might be like an external situation, like an injustice that I'm noticing. It might be something internal. And when I reflect on that feeling of anger and kind of bring some curiosity to it, I might recognize that perhaps there's a response in me that is maybe not of God, an area that I need to invite Jesus into. But I think the point is the emotion is just the signal. And then it's how we respond to that emotion that can be helpful and honor God, or it can lead to our own kind of like selfish desire and motivation. But I think our emotions can be used by God really to shape us and to mold us.
I love that analogy of our emotions being like warning lights on a dashboard. I think that's a really, really helpful picture. Playing devil's advocate a little bit, what if you had to convince someone who thought this was, you know, all a load of psychobabble, it's just, you know, it's blowing this kind of emotion thing out of proportion, what would you say are the sort of long-term wins for us as families when we learn to manage our emotions well?
In Mark 12, Jesus is asked what is the most important commandment. Basically, he's been asked like, what's the most important thing that we should do? And he replies with the words, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. So he's quoting basically from the Ten Commandments, which were the guidelines given by God to help his people live well. And what I love about this verse is that it's a reminder of how intricately and wonderfully made we are. We're different parts woven together. So our heart is talking about our emotions, our soul, our spiritual being, our mind, like our mental thought life, and our body, our physical being. And that's how God made us. And so if we want to live well and we want to raise children who are healthy and who are living well, then we need to be thinking about their whole being, their physical well-being, their mental health, their spiritual health, and their emotional well-being, because that's how we were designed. That's how God made us. I think as we parent our kids and support and journey with them through different developmental stages, I think we're often really aware of their physical needs, what they need from us in that area. We feed them, we keep them warm, we kind of create opportunities for them to be physically active. We support their mental development, like we often prioritize education and growing in that area. And I think if you're someone that's listening to this podcast, then I'm assuming that you're pressing into really supporting your kids' spiritual needs and their spiritual development. But I'm not sure we're always quite so aware of our kids' emotional development and of how to support that quite so well. But for me, it's like equally important. If we're going to parent in a holistic way and honor and support like every aspect of how God made them, then we need to really press into mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional well-being, development, and health.
And Lisa, are there particular points of childhood or adolescence where our kids are going to sort of maybe experience bigger emotions? Like, does puberty have an impact, increased hormones, or is that just a myth and actually there's lots going on at every stage?
I think a lot of that in the past has been put down to kind of hormonal changes. But actually, I think we're learning that the picture is potentially a little bit bigger. And so if we can understand child brain development, then that helps us understand those times a little bit more. So like for a toddler, whose brain is still literally being built, they're going to really struggle to self-regulate. That's because the thinking part of their brain, it's called the prefrontal cortex, that's not developed enough for them to be able to reason well, to be able to calm themselves. They still are reliant on some of that co-regulation, that co-calming, because that bit of their brain's not working. There's a really brilliant video on YouTube. I'll make sure you've got the link so you can put it in the notes. And he does a really good job of explaining what is going on in the adolescent brain. It's by a guy called Dr. Dan Siegel, who I really rate. And he talks about, rather than the kind of myth of raging hormones fueling like emotional dysregulation in our teens, actually, potentially, it's more about a new stage in the development process of their brains. When we're moving from like our brains being like sponges, which is what it is in children, they're literally absorbing, they're building at a kind of huge, fast rate. And during their teen years, they move from that kind of soaking everything up to more of a kind of pruning and specializing phase as they kind of develop more what they're into. And so I think there's been a bit of a shift in how we understand the reasons behind what is happening in those big explosive developmental moments that actually I think can really help us as parents and youth and children workers to kind of adjust our expectations perhaps and bring a more helpful response. But actually, I think understanding the difference behind the kind of why of that is really important because it hugely changes and empowers, I think, the response that we can bring as parents. If we kind of write it all off as just hormonal, it doesn't feel like there's much you can do about it. It's kind of beyond your control. You're kind of at the whim of hormones that are flying around. But actually, when we understand that a lot of it is brain development, then a huge thing that we know about brain development is that our brain is shaped and built largely through interaction with safe caregivers, which means that as parents, we have a huge part to play in that building process. There's things we can do that support that development in a really healthy way. Potentially also things we can do that don't support it, but we have a role to play and we can really support and journey with our children in those times. It's not just there's not really anything I can do about that. It's just hormones.
That was really helpful what you just shared with us. Is there anything else that kind of you can tell us about maybe what's going on behind our emotions that is kind of easy for even the unspecialized non-psychotherapist parents, most of us are, that we can kind of get our heads around and that can really help our parenting?
So basically what we know now is that the brain builds from the bottom up. So the brain is actually one of the only organisms in your body or the only organs in your body that isn't fully formed at birth. And it isn't fully formed and matured until you're in your mid to late 20s, which is really late. And I think if you're a parent of a teenager, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So the part of the brain that is most active at birth is like the lower part of the brain. The brainstem. And that's responsible for things like basic function, things like breathing, blinking, the sucking reflex. But it also controls your reactions, so your fight, flight, freeze responses. And then at the top part of your brain is your prefrontal cortex. Just mentioned that. That's the thinking part of the brain. That's responsible for things like emotional regulation, planning, making good decisions. Now, that bit of the brain isn't really fully formed at birth. That's going to take the next 20 years to build. And I think the first thing for us to remember as parents, when our children are struggling and experiencing big emotions that can lead to those really challenging, tricky meltdown moments, it's often not about them being naughty or even making poor choices. Emotional regulation and reasoning is all dealt with in that top part of the brain. That's not been fully built yet. I think also understanding how our children's brains are formed can hugely help us understand what is happening in those meltdown moments. So the times when they're experiencing big emotions. And a guy called Dan Siegel that I've just mentioned, he created a really helpful tool to help us kind of grasp what is going on in those meltdown moments. It's called the hand brain model, and it's a bit tricky to explain in a podcast because it's a really visual tool. But I've created a short kind of YouTube video that explains it a little bit more. So I'll make sure you've got the link if anyone wants to just press in a bit more detail. But in essence, what he says in that is that when we experience big emotions that can cause us to feel kind of unsafe in any way, our body's natural defense system kicks in. Now, if we think of like a kind of real extreme emergency, like being chased by a bear, which obviously happens every day on the high street. But what we don't need in that situation is like a kind of multifaceted action plan that weighs up all the options and works out what the best way forward is. If we do that first, then basically we get eaten by the bear. Yep. What we need is to run away and very fast. Mm-hmm. And so what our defense system does is it kind of switches off the thinking bit of our brain. And it diverts oxygen and blood flow away from there and puts it instead to other bits of the body that we need to help us either fight the danger or run away from it or to hide. So that's basically our fight, flight, freeze response. So the key thing for us as parents to remember during those times of big emotion is that the chances are our child's thinking brain is probably not really online. In that moment, that child doesn't feel unsafe. Big emotions are really scary and they don't feel safe. So we can't really reason with them or even educate a child in that space and help them think about why their behavior or their responses were not appropriate before we can reason and reflect with them, which obviously as parents we want to do. But before we can do that, we need their thinking brain to be back online. And we do that by helping them feel safe.
So how do we help them feel safe?
I think the main thing to do in that space is to meet our kids where they're at. So at that moment of kind of emotional meltdown, where they're at is in their lower brain, their kind of brainstem. So things like they're engaging their senses in that space, bringing a sensory approach. There's a really lovely tool I think works better with older children, but just helping them to kind of scan the area, engage their senses, give me four things you can see, three things you can hear, two things you can smell, one thing you can touch, just gets them aware of their bodies and back in their kind of sensory space. The other thing that is just brilliant is breathing. Like I literally cannot say enough how brilliant breathing is. Obviously, beyond the, clearly if we don't breathe, we don't live. Like, so it's obviously important for that reason. But deep breathing and the benefits of deep breathing have just been shown to have such massive, wide-ranging benefits. So I just, in my own life each day, have tried to really bring in moments of deep breathing. I really love doing breathing prayers. So just reading a simple scripture as I breathe in and out three times, kind of try and do that before I go into any meeting. And just because it really helps us. But in a moment of kind of being in a big meltdown and feeling unsafe, breathing brings down your heart rate and it helps basically signal to your body that you are safe. So if we can do some lovely breathing activities with our children, the thing with breathing activities is we need to do them when they're not in a meltdown moment because you're not ready to learn something new in that time. So if we can build breathing prayers, they're a great thing to do at bedtime and build them in with our children so that they kind of have that as a bit of a tool in their back pocket when they need to pull it out. I really like hand breathing just because most of us always got a hand. So you just trace around your fingers and as you go up a finger or a thumb, you take a big breath in. And as you go down, you take a breath out. So it basically helps you do five deep breaths. But there's loads and loads and loads of breathing activities. There's really nice ones where you can put your cuddly toys on your tummy and watch them go up and down, whatever. There's loads of suggestions online, but deep breathing in that time of big emotion helps your body feel safe and your thinking brain come back online. And then we can discuss why you just kicked your sister or whatever it is that happened. But yeah. It just helps you feel safe.
Thank you so much for going so practical. That's really helpful. One of our key tools at Parenting with Faith is surfing the waves. And I just think this is so relevant when it comes to emotions, because it can be a bit like surfing with the highs and the lows of our children and our teens' emotions. How do you suggest we come alongside our kids as they journey with their emotions? Because sometimes it can feel quite scary, can't it, to go through these big emotions? And do you think this can be an opportunity on their faith journey as well?
I think the first thing we can do is to help build our children's vocabulary around their emotions. I think it's almost like our feelings sometimes can get stuck in our bodies when we can't talk about them. So helping our children build a vocab bank that helps them understand and articulate emotions is hugely important. And a really great way to do that is to get into the habit of narrating what is happening. So a really useful phrase is the phrase "I can see." So I can see that you're feeling really cross right now because I've said you can't eat jelly beans for breakfast, whatever it is, but I really care about you. I want to make sure that your body has what it needs to grow strong. Just that kind of narrating. I can see that you're really excited about going swimming this afternoon. Isn't it fun to have something to look forward to? Just kind of narrating. We just give our kids more vocabulary about what's going on, but using some of the vocab around emotions is really powerful. And then I think talking through what different feelings look like or feel like is
Okay.
really helpful. So what does happy feel like in your body? If sad was a colour, what colour would it be and why? King David does it really well in Psalm 39, verse 3. He says that in his anguish, his heart grew hot within him, which I just think is such a good description of what anguish feels like, your heart feeling hot within you. So there's some really great books that have been written now for children that just help them to explore their emotions and kind of unpack them a little bit. I've written some book reviews on ones that I feel are good, but also I've written some kind of like family devotion resources that just help us put the faith element into that and to think about what Jesus says about those emotions and how they feel like. So yeah, they're just available for free on the website.
Oh, thanks, Sue. So we'll pop the link in the show notes so that anyone listening can grab that. Thank you. That sounds amazing. We're nearly out of time, sadly, because this is fascinating. But I know that we definitely have some big emotions at Casa Rycroft, but I know that often they come from me and my husband, not our children. So just as we kind of bring this to a close, what are your top tips for us as adults in understanding and managing our own emotional responses? Because we're bringing our children up in this age where there's a lot talked about, and you know, some of the science you're talking about has only really kind of come about in the last 10, 20 years. So we were not necessarily, like this generation of parents was not necessarily raised with that science accessible to our parents. So this can often be more of a struggle for us as parents. So we're trying to navigate it for our children, but we're also trying to navigate it for ourselves. So any top tips for us?
Yeah, totally. I think as adults, lots of us, all of us could benefit from bringing a little bit more curiosity to our own emotions. I was preaching at our church a few weeks ago with a bunch of adults, and we were looking at the do not worry passage. And I did an activity with them that I often do with children, just to help them think what that emotion feels like in their body. So I just said, what does worry feel like in your body? And I was really surprised by the lack of response, not because people didn't want to participate or shout out, but because they just didn't seem to know what to say. Like a couple of people talked about the effects of what that feeling looked like. So like lack of sleep because my mind's wearing, but actually being conscious of what that feeling feels like. How do we notice it? How do we recognize that that's what we're feeling? Things like for worry, I guess, clenched fists, a tense headache, a squirmy tummy, like tense muscles, that kind of thing. I just think we're not always good at noticing in our own bodies and then bringing a bit of recognition to that and articulating it. So I think we've all definitely got some work to do in this area as adults. And if we're going to help our children explore it well, then actually we can do it together. The books and activities that I mentioned earlier, like don't just see them as an activity that we do for or to our children, like do it with them. Allow yourself to bring a bit of curiosity as you explore it with your children and explore it for yourself as well. But I also think it's really important to look after yourself. Yeah. Like when you get on an aeroplane and sit through the safety advice, you're told that if there's ever an emergency, the first thing you have to do is put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help someone else. And I think that's really important for us in a kind of wider sense in our parenting, but particularly when it comes to emotional regulation. Looking after ourselves and caring for our own needs is not something I think we're always very good at as parents. It's so easy to put everyone else's needs before our own. But investing in our own well-being is really, really important. It's kind of the heart behind living well, which is the kind of other project that I'm doing, which is exploring what it looks like to live well. So well-being with Jesus at the center. And there's loads of, again, free resources and ideas on that website just to get you started. But yeah, looking after ourselves and bringing a bit of curiosity and journeying with our kids. Let's explore it together.
We're going to put all the links to everything you've mentioned in the show notes and some additional links as well, so people can explore Wonderful Me and all the resources you've created, but also the ones that you recommend. Just can you share with us in a nutshell what you offer to churches? Like, what is Wonderful Me? What are you doing? Just so we can kind of get involved if it's something that will benefit us.
Yeah, so basically, I just want to journey with churches that want to explore this area a little bit more. So we've already said lots of this kind of discovery that we've been going on kind of for the last 10, 20 years. It's all quite new. It's quite fresh. I think it's generally been in the realm of psychologists and scientists. And I think because of that, it's an area that's just littered with kind of jargon and words that seem a little bit scary. And so the heart really behind Wonderful Me is, how do we take that rich learning? It's a beautiful thing to explore how we're fearfully and wonderfully made. And there's really good stuff that helps us do what we are doing in so much more of an effective way, and in a way that kind of works with our kids' biology, not against it. And so Wonderful Me really is about creating a kind of some resources that anchor some of that stuff in a really simple way. So we've got training that I offer online or for churches. There's resources that help you really implement that. I also offer like coaching and support if you kind of have specific kids that you want to really think through their needs. What does that look like for them? And quite a lot on trauma response. How do we understand trauma? How do we bring a trauma sensitive response? How do we basically create safe spaces in our churches that enable everyone to feel seen and heard and valued?
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you for everything you've shared today. It's been super interesting.
And a question to spark an interesting conversation with your children this week. When did Jesus express big emotions? When did Jesus express big emotions? There are quite a few times in the Gospels that we read about when Jesus expressed big emotions. So see how many you can come up with, and enjoy your interesting conversation. See you next week. Bye.